What the Health with George Bertineau on FUBAR Radio.
Good morning and welcome to What the Health on FUBAR Radio with me, George Bertineau. If you're a regular listener, then welcome back. And if you're new around here, then here's a small bit of information about myself. I'm an online health and fitness expert. I have a BSc in sports rehabilitation, and I'm a former head of medical performance in professional football. I've been in the health and fitness industry for over a decade, and I've been helping real people feel better, move smarter, and get incredible results. If you are sick of dodgy influencers or people with amazing genetics giving you health advice online, you are definitely in the right place. Because every week I help you cut through the confusion of the internet, we discuss relevant topics, and I help you get clarity on these topics so that you can make better decisions in your own health and fitness journey. Each week I'll be joined by expert guests as we dissect trends and we bust myths. Last week I caught up with three-time world's strongest woman, Rebecca Roberts, to speak about breaking the stigma around periods. Joining me now is going to be Rebecca Roberts, who is the Welsh strongwoman and athlete. So, Rebecca is the world's strongest woman from North Wales. You're joining me now to highlight the taboos that still surround women's health and exposing the hidden challenges many face each month. So, there is new research that reveals that 3 in 4 women are less likely to leave the house during a heavy period, with almost half saying it leaves them feeling mentally drained or stressed. So, let's dive straight into this, okay? Research is showing 87% of women experience heavy periods. What is your reaction, first of all, to these figures?
At first, I'm not surprised because I myself, I deal with heavy periods on a monthly basis. I suffer with polycystic ovary syndrome. And I know a lot of my friends who I talk to as well, that they really suffer with heavy periods. But it's just generally something that's not really spoken about. I know Bodyform found in their research that nearly 2 in 5 women don't feel confident talking about their periods to people like their managers or their bosses or even their family. Mm. So I do feel like it's really important to start opening up the topic.
Yeah, and I mean, it's something that I talk to my clients about. Obviously, I'm not a female, but, you know, it's a conversation that I say to them, you know, if they are comfortable, and I actually find that most of my clients are comfortable talking to me about it because I'm there to help them, you know, change their lives, understand that there is a cycle and that for, you know, 5-7 days of the month, maybe a little bit longer, maybe a little bit shorter, depending on how you feel and whatnot, you know, you're going to want to eat more, for example, and you're going to want to do less, and you're going to feel drained, and you're going to feel all of these different emotions and feelings. And that, you know, if they're comfortable talking about it, then it's a safe space where they're not going to be judged, because at the end of the day, I'm there to help them. So, you know, why do you think it's so common that talking about periods is still taboo?
I think obviously that this whole thing that periods are unclean and with the blood and things like that, and people maybe kind of get a little bit freaked out by the fact that we are bleeding for nearly a quarter of our month every single month. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's really important to start talking about it and make people feel like that they're not alone if they are having problems with their periods. It's something that every single woman goes through. It's a natural thing. I remember a time back a few years ago where when I was in the supermarket, I'd be hiding the fact that I was buying period products. I just got to the point where it was like, why am I doing this? This is a natural thing. Every single woman goes through having periods. So why can we not talk about it? Why is there this stigma behind periods? And it's why I'm here now, and it's why I'm really passionate about working with Bodyform to be able to kind of promote the fact that I am here talking about my periods, and hopefully more women will open up about theirs and get any help that they need if they are struggling with heavy periods.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I've heard of scenarios where it's like people feel uncomfortable buying tampons or buying sanitary towels, or, you know, and it's a totally normal thing. Like you said, every woman has a period. You know, here's a different question for you. Do you feel that terminology has a foothold to kind of play in it as well? I use the term shark week with my clients. They quite like that. They find that quite funny, and they kind of make it makes them feel a little bit more relaxed. I've had clients that have used the word star week. You know, do you feel that maybe the verbiage around periods is something that's a little bit taboo as well? Or do you think that that's kind of maybe helps people feel a little bit more comfortable?
Yeah, definitely. Like I use the word shark week with my coach as well, because I have to talk very openly about my periods and my monthly cycle with him. And if it's a terminology that helps women feel more comfortable about talking about their periods and obviously not mentioning blood all of the time, and Shark Week is a really fun way to actually start getting women to talk about it. And if that is something that women feel more comfortable saying instead of, oh, I'm bleeding now, I'm on my period, then I'm all for it. And I think it's really good, and it's definitely something that I do. My coach, he gets the ins and outs of my cycle every single month, because we do have to plan around
it's super important,
as a world's strongest woman. I struggle with my periods. There are times where in the month where I'm weaker than others, and we have to pull back on training. So he needs to know what's going on with my body and my hormones.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's going to lead me on to my next question. How important is it to periodize your training around your period? You know, you've just hit the nail on the head with that. How does that help you with your performance? How does that help you, you know, feel fresher or maybe feel unfresh, you know?
Yeah, so in a typical month, I'll have 1 week where I feel super strong and unstoppable. Mm-hmm. And I'll around that 1 week, I'll have 2 weeks where I'm okay. Mm-hmm. And then I will have a week where I feel weak, where I'm like, oh, I'm quitting the sport, I'm retiring, I'm not doing this anymore. But because my body just doesn't want to work, it's typically the week that before my period. And during that week, I speak to my coach, I tell him, Shark Week is coming next week. Yeah. I need to like strip back on my training. And that's when we'll usually strip the weight back and increase the volume. And that typically really helps with me. Mm-hmm. Because my strength isn't at a peak, but I can still get some work in. So we kind of play it by ear, and we really work around it. And I don't really see many athletes in sport like talking about the struggles that we have to go through as women in sport around our periods. So it's why now I feel really passionate about this project, and hopefully more women can start talking about it.
Yeah, and speaking of more women, 16% of women feel they are able to talk to their manager about their periods. So that leaves quite a big percentage that, you know, don't feel comfortable. How can we change it?
I think by doing what we're doing now, in the media, talking about periods, like showing that it is a normal thing that women go through every single month. I feel like maybe if women see more women being open and talking about their periods and their monthly cycle, then they'll feel more obliged to be able to speak about it themselves and have the courage to speak up about it. Because a lot of women, nearly 87% of women, it was found, struggle with heavy periods especially. So there is support out there, and they just need that confidence to speak up. And hopefully by doing what we're doing in this campaign now with Bodyform, we can do that and hopefully give them the confidence to be able to speak to their GPs, get some help, or speak to their friends and families or even managers at work, so they're more understanding.
Yeah, and I think you working on this project is huge to show others that you're being confident with what you're doing and what you're openly talking about, which is then going to inspire others. And that's why we do things like this, right? We want to inspire others, we want to help, and we want to support. You can't do it if you don't want to help people, right?
100%. And this is why I'm really happy to be in the position that I'm in now. I'm using my standing and my position as the world's strongest woman to do good and to help women in all walks of life, women in sport, women that just live in their daily lives, to take up space and know their worth and be confident with who they are as a person, and hopefully get any help that they need.
Yeah, and We're kind of jumping back and forth here, but you know, I just want this to flow and you feel comfortable. Back onto your training. Okay, so you mentioned, you know, 1 week you feel on top of the world, super strong, you know, and then you have two weeks where you feel okay, and then normally the week before your period arrives, you feel a little bit weaker, or you feel like you said you want to quit the sport, you don't feel confident with it, and, you know, you do more volume and you do lighter weight. You know, any other information for any of the listeners with what you're doing with your training?
So generally my training, it changes depending on whether I'm preparing for a competition or whether I have an off season. So currently right now I'm training 4 times a week because I have World's Strongest Woman coming up again in 2 weeks time. So my personal training can range from 3 to 4 hours a session, where I'm in the gym. But then if I'm in like an off season where I don't have a competition coming up, I might train 5 times a week, but for 1.5 hours, like a lot shorter sessions. Yeah. So my training is very much adapted to where I'm at in my season, whether I have competitions, whether I have a little bit of a break.
Mm-hmm. Okay, nice. So 2 weeks until your next competition. Where's it based?
So I'll be flying out to Texas on the 18th of November to hopefully retain my next World's Strongest Woman title.
No, you're going
get title
to.
Number 4.
We believe in you. We believe in you in here in the studio. So you're going to get there. That's amazing. That's super exciting. And 2 weeks isn't far away. Right. Jumping back onto what we were talking about before. A lot of it stems back to people needing to understand that it's just supernatural. It's just what happens.
Yeah.
It's part
That's the
of,
thing.
You know.
Every single woman goes through periods. Like, this is something that 50% of our population go through. So why can we not be open and talk about it? And hopefully by doing this campaign now, more women will feel confident in speaking about their periods and their problems that they're going through.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you've just covered my next question, which is how important is it to normalise conversation about heavy periods in the public space? We've touched upon it. You know, you've just kind of brushed upon it then. You know, does more need to be done education-wise at school? You know, do there need to be, for example, YouTubers and content creators that are, you know, talking and focusing on content about women's health?
Exactly. Like growing up, especially in school, I never really had any lessons in school about periods, and I didn't really know what to expect, especially when I first started my period. And I never see anyone talking about it. I can't hardly remember any women in sport speaking about periods, any kind of social media influence speaking about it. It's always been a subject that's never really spoken about. And to be honest, I'm not 100% sure why, because it's such a natural thing. Everyone has to go through it. We wouldn't be here if it wasn't for periods and women's reproductive systems working.
Exactly.
So this is why I do feel passionate about being on this campaign, and hopefully everybody that's listening feels a little bit more confident after this conversation in going out and speaking about their problems and their periods.
I think they will, and I think we're only going to have time for one more question. So I'm going to jump back to what advice would you have for anyone wanting to train or exercise during their period from your experience?
So from my experience, if you are going through your period, it's just to give your best on that day. So your best might look different to your best on a day where you're not going through your cycle, and that's okay. So on my periods, I'm probably around 70% to what my normal week looks like on a training day, and that's fine. And it's just about accepting the fact that that's where you're at in your cycle. And a lot of people may get frustrated with that, but it's just important to just trust the process. As long as you're getting in and moving, that's the absolute main thing. Your best might not look that like that 100%, but that's fine. Just keep going, keep plodding along, and you'll get to your goals in the end.
Yeah, and I think you've hit the nail on the head there. You know, movement is medicine, and I think, you know, just because you feel 70% doesn't mean you can't give 100% on that day. And if that 100% is your 70%, then you've hit the nail on the head.
Exactly, definitely.
Yeah. So, right, Rebecca, that is all we're going to have time for. Where can people find you online? Can you talk about the campaign for us? You know, do you have social media? Let us know all of the above. And yeah.
Yeah, so I have partnered with Bodyform for this campaign, and my social media is Rebecca Roberts Strongwoman on Instagram is where I'm mainly active and post about all of my training, all of my problems, and I'm very open on there.
Great. We love that. Well, thank you so much for your time. You have a great rest of your day, and we will speak to you very soon.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. Take care. Bye-bye. Right, guys, coming up after this short break, I'll be speaking and answering some of your listener questions.
FUBAR Radio. That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Let's go back to the beginning. A mortgage advisor. What does a mortgage advisor do?
So, the main purpose of a mortgage advisor is to help you to achieve the best possible mortgage solution on time and first time. Typically, in the modern day, it's somebody who's going to hold your hand through the full home buying process, liaising with solicitors, estate agents, helping with insurance, and yeah, being in your corner on your team to make sure you achieve that goal.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
When it comes to heart attacks, you might be surprised to hear the symptoms don't always feel severe. You could experience a squeezing across the chest, a feeling of unease, a sense something's not quite right. Don't be tempted to dismiss the signs and wait to see what happens. The faster you seek medical help, the better your chances. It's never too early to call 999 and describe your symptoms. Your NHS is here for you.
It was calm on the beach, so I took my little girl out on the water. Then we hit the wind, and it blew us out to sea, faster than we could paddle back. And we learned our lesson from these guys, the crew who got us home. Thank you.
Respect the water and watch out for the winds. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
We are joined by Miss Safia. If I could produce you a salt, what is he like on paper? Sound like we're on Love Island.
Okay, on paper, my type has to have a good soul, yeah, good purpose and calm energy. I'm in my energy era where you've just got to come in and make me happy. I don't need you for anything. I want to find happiness and I need him to be kind.
Couple Goals with Sophie Kasai and Jordan Brooke.
Moira Higgins,
that's a Geordie Shaw thing,
has scrubbed a shitty toilet with her ex-boyfriend's toothbrush. Why did she do this?
He's obviously done something very bad.
Do we know who he is? Does anybody know who he is?
No, but I mean, I don't think he'd want to know who he is.
No.
I think he'd probably go and hide in now, whoever that is.
Mate, if you're listening to this, go and buy a new toothbrush because you've still got the same one.
Get yourself to Turkey and get yourself some veneers because I can't imagine them teeth are going to last much longer.
No.
Follow us at What The Health Show for more with George. This is What The Health.
This is What The Health on FUBAR Radio with me, George Bertineau. Time for some listener questions. But if you do want to get involved, you can send us any TikTok trends or any sort of questions. DM us on Instagram at What The Health Show. Or you can message me personally at George Bert on Instagram. Right, question number one. Are wearable fitness trackers actually improving our health or just adding more stress about our numbers? So I actually did a reel about this the other day or the other week. And there are so many variables and so many issues with these wearable fitness trackers. Or should we just say watches to start with? So the amount of data that they actually use is super, super low. Like, I'm pretty sure, from what I remember from my reel, it was that your skin complexion can determine how accurate your wristwatch is. It doesn't really take many, many factors into consideration when actually there are so many important factors on how we actually burn calories. So there's a study done. What university was it? I can't remember. But either way, there was a study done in the US where they tracked all of these fancy kind of, you know, watches and fitness trackers, and the most accurate was about 20 to 25% inaccurate. So I often say to my clients, I often say to people that I meet and talk to about stuff like this, 50% of the calories, active calories burnt through a gym session, that's what you should be using as your marker. And that could still be wildly inaccurate. So let's say I go and do 100 minutes of exercise, 1,000 calories burnt. Just to make it really, really simple, halve it. There you go. So I've done 500 calories. Because if you've done more, then guess what? If you're on a fat loss journey or a weight loss journey, that is extra calories in the piggy bank or whatever you want to call it, or the food bank. And if it's anything else, then I wouldn't worry, because, you know, 50% is a pretty good way of giving it a number, should we say. So yeah, I don't think it's adding more stress. I think it's giving us readings, and what gets measured gets managed. And also, data is data. If you have data, then you can literally figure out where you're going wrong. That's why I say to people, if you don't track and you don't lose, then we don't know where you've gone wrong. So yeah, hopefully that answers your question. Next question, what's the real difference between strength training and cardio when it comes to long-term health? So cardiovascular health has scientifically been proven to improve longevity of life by 400%. That is due to cardiovascular health improvements. Strength training has a correlation with 350%, I think it is. So they're both incredible for longevity of life. So 350% for strength training to improve longevity of life, and 400% for cardiovascular fitness. Now, the difference is strength training also has a correlation with longevity of life, because there's a study that's been done over leg strength and mass. The stronger your legs are, or the more muscle tissue you have on your legs, the lower risk you have of falling, and also the higher percentage you have of living longer, because your legs are stronger. And obviously, as you get older, falling is a higher risk of broken hips, broken pelvis, broken legs, broken everything. And then you have lots of problems, because the older you are, the harder it is to heal. And we are still a long way away from being able to, you know, inject people with some sort of substance to speed up healing as we get older. So the difference is strength training aesthetically and physically makes you feel better, and cardiovascular kind of only really just makes your heart stronger, which is great, because we need our heart. But also, there are lots of people out there who don't have strong hearts, and strength training actually improves, you know, heart health. So hopefully that helps. How can I get results without tracking calories? That's an interesting question, because again, I've actually done a reel on this recently. So snacking, stop snacking. Your body works on a clock. So if you, after about 2 or 3 weeks of not eating breakfast, or let's say you want to try fasting, or you want to try and do one of these fads, or one of these things that are going to help you, you know, decrease your calories and you know, and feel better about yourself and your body. So you would stop eating breakfast, let's say, every day of the week for the first 2-3 weeks. You're going to be absolutely famished in the morning. You're going to be starving, you're going to be hungry. But when your body starts to get used to it, and the body clock starts to go, oh, I don't need breakfast because I haven't had breakfast in a very long time, your body starts to get used to it. It's like with snacking. If you have 3, 4, 5 meals a day, which some people do, depends on how many calories you need, depends on your fitness goals, depends on all of the variables that you can possibly think of, that is where your body knows you're going to eat. So if you're eating at 8, 11, 2, 4, and then let's say 7 or 8, great. But if you're eating sporadically and you grab and go and you snack, all of that, it makes you a lot more hungry. And normally snacks are pretty pretty awful when it comes to spiking your hunger hormones and suppressing your full hormones. So they are leptin and ghrelin. So long and short, how can you get results without tracking? Stop snacking. Have three standard meals, lots of water, lots of protein, and before you know it, you're probably going to be a stone down, because most people snack and then they have dinner as well, or they snack and then they have breakfast and they snack and they have lunch. They snack and they have dinner. Like last night, I had a pint. It was about half a kilo of protein ice cream, which I made myself. It's about 350 calories. It was Nutella protein ice cream. It was incredible. And it had like 40 grams of protein in, because it was like protein milk and a few other extra bits and bobs. And then it was like 20 to 30 grams of Nutella, all swirled in, all mixed up. And then put in my Ninja Creami, because that, by the way, is incredible. And before you know it, I was having 350, 400 calories of protein ice cream, and it was great. I felt good. I had some, that was my, you know, post-dinner dessert, instead of eating crazy amounts of calories from Haagen-Dazs, because, you know, we all want to make gains. And time for one more question. What's one thing I must do to get results? Oh, that's a really good question. How can I make this quick? I would say, track. You have to have an idea of what you're eating. If you don't track and you guesstimate, you can still get results, but it's a lot harder and it's a lot more inaccurate. If I had to pick one other thing, it would be steps. Not 8, not 10,000 every day. There's a correlation to show that anything above 7 and 8, the time spent doing it versus the trade-off of calories burn, isn't actually worth it. But from 0 to 7 or 8,000, the trade-off is huge. And actually, that's not that much walking. I, in 50 minutes of consistent walking, I do about 4,500 to 5,500 steps. If you do that in like 50 minutes, think about, most people do 7,000 or 8,000 naturally a day. So yeah, hopefully that helps. Right, guys, coming up after this short break, I'm going to be joined by Nigel Clark, who is CEO of Zeus Sleeps, and we're going to be talking about the impact of snoring.
FUBAR Radio.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
The lovely Matt Phipps.
Hello. The thing that surprised me most was how much joy I took in being, like, making people feel really uncomfortable. It's so
Amen.
Good. So good.
Your mum jokes change completely.
My friend the other day, she was like, how tall is your mum? And I was like, oh, she's 6 feet under. Yeah, they did not know what to do with that. Yeah. And then you let it hang in the air.
Yeah.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
If you drink a little, then drive, you risk losing your licence. You risk every day becoming more complicated.
How am I supposed to get to training, Dad?
You risk losing your job.
I'm going to have to let you go.
You risk your family not looking at you the same way.
I can't believe you did that.
You risk injuring someone.
Hello, I need an ambulance.
You risk being seen as a drink driver. Drink a little, risk a lot. Think.
Registering to vote means you can take part in the way decisions are made in the UK. When you register to vote, you are then able to cast your vote at local and national elections. You can help choose who runs your area and makes decisions about things you care about. Millions of people in the UK aren't registered to vote, and they miss out on having their voice heard. It's quick and easy to register. It only takes 5 minutes. You can do it online, or you can ask for a paper form at your local council. Register to vote now at gov.uk register to vote.
Politics Uncensored.
We kind of act like COVID didn't happen. Well, do you think it's had a lasting impact, at least on that young generation that experienced it?
The legacy of it in schools, you see the legacy of it in people's mental health. We're seeing the legacy of it even in public services, even in hotels, hospitality. Everything was stripped back to the bone, and the UK did not have the resilience to recover. So I think we are still definitely living in a post-COVID society where nothing really works as well as it did. If you think things were damaged by Brexit, yeah, things were double damaged by COVID.
Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
Danny Harmer, hello.
Thank you, what an introduction.
I heard in an interview, this may no longer be the case, but in 2020 you said you never actually read the original Tracy Beaker.
I've still never read it, and I'm gonna go down with this ship, and quite frankly, I shall never read it. I've got this far in life. And do you know what? I think it's kind of, in a weird way, I think it helped me get the part, because I had no idea of this character apart from the character that I made her.
What the hell? With Georges Bertineau. Exclusively on FUBAR Radio.
This is What the Health on FUBAR Radio with me, Georges Bertineau. Joining me now is Nigel Clark, CEO of Zeus Sleeps, and we're going to be discussing the impact of snoring and how he might have a solution. A study recently found that 74% of adults say that someone in their household snores. So that's over 41 million of us. That's nearly two-thirds, revealing snoring impacts their quality of life. Nigel, good morning. How are you?
Morning, George. Yeah, very well, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Good. No, thank you so much for joining us. Right, we're going to jump straight into it because this is a super interesting talk in my eyes. I'm very intrigued by this. So, first of all, can you tell us what is Zeus Sleep?
Yeah, so it's a revolutionary new device. We're a startup, but we've been going 15 years in development. So a little funny story, but and a long story. We've been doing research with King's College London and Guy's Hospital London for 15 years into snoring and sleep apnea. And we've come up with a tiny little device that sits under your chin when you sleep, and it stops you snoring, and also will next year be have a CE mark, which is a medical device to hopefully treat obstructive sleep apnea.
Okay. And why does... So you've obviously, you know, like you said, it's a startup, and, you know, it's been 15 years in the making. Now, we're going to bring it back just before that. Why does snoring happen? And obviously, why has this been kind of created? So, yeah, why does snoring happen?
Yeah, so... I'm not an expert, so I run the company, but I'm not a doctor or anything like that. But you're, very simply how I put it, your tongue is a muscle. Mm-hmm. And like all your muscles, when you sleep, they relax to rest. And if they're injured, help them regenerate and things. I know you go to the gym a lot. I've seen some of your stuff on Instagram. So you need sleep to recover. So all your muscles relax. So your tongue relaxes in the back of your throat. And then when you pass air over it, if it's relaxed too much or if it blocks the airways, it then vibrates and creates this snoring noise. Some obviously a lot worse than others.
Yes.
And then in severe cases, the tongue actually blocks the airway. And that's when you stop breathing at night. Mm. And you might have experienced where you go, you suddenly kind of wake up with a jolt. Yes. And you gasp for air. That's what's called obstructive sleep apnea. So your tongue is actually blocking your airways. Mm. And for some people with severe sleep apnea, you're talking hundreds of times an hour they stop breathing. Some people can stop breathing for minutes at a time. So obviously that's very, very dangerous and a serious medical condition. But at the moment, our device is, what it does is it stimulates some muscles under your chin.
Okay.
That activate your tongue or pull your tongue forward very, very slightly and open up your airways. And the clever thing about it is it does that without waking you, without you realizing it's happening. Otherwise, you know, it wouldn't be much good if it woke you up. It's as good as a jab in the ribs when you're snoring.
Exactly. Okay. So that's going to lead me a little bit on to my next question, which is how does this technology compared to the likes of sleep tape? Because I've seen loads of sleep tape. Like, I even use it myself. I know that throughout when I'm asleep, I breathe through my mouth. So I thought, oh, I snore, but obviously I only know that if there's someone with me or whatnot. So I've been using mouth tape and I actually feel that that's helped me sleep better. But this, by the sounds of it, sounds like it's something even better and more revolutionary. So how does it kind of compare to the likes of sleep tape, where that kind of people might feel restricted because it's blocking their mouth?
Yeah, there are lots of solutions out there for improving your sleep. I've tried sleep tape. It's a strange sensation to start with, but it was like after a while, it was strangely satisfying. It was an interesting one. And I also many years ago did a lot of research into mouth breathing versus nasal breathing and things like that. And if you can help your snoring and improve your sleep by improving your breathing, mm-hmm. then that is fantastic. One thing about mouth tape, for example, or gum shields you can wear to adjust your jawline while you sleep, they're all good. You do notice you're wearing them, obviously, the mouth tape a little bit less than gum shields.
Yes.
And what we've done with Zeus more is everything has been designed, and it's been designed over the last 15 years to be worn unnoticed, so you don't know you're wearing it, and it does treat you. I'm not too sure how much medical and clinical research has gone into mouth tape.
I don't know either, actually.
Yeah. And if it works for you, fantastic. I said I'm not a doctor, so I'm not going to promote it or not promote
yes.
it.
Yes, yes, yes.
The problem is big enough that multiple solutions can exist in society, and I've got I'm very clear on that. Ours certainly is not a one size fits all. It's not perfect for everyone. But it is a good solution for many. It's been through 3 clinical trials in the NHS. We've just received a big grant to run another big clinical trial starting next year across 6 hospitals across the UK. So we've very much gone down that medical route and proved by the NHS.
Yeah, and I think that's super important, right? You're getting all the clinical trials and you're getting everything you need to back up with science, because there's a lot of people out there who are all about fads, they're all about gimmicks, they're all about quick fixes. You know, mouth tape, I'm yet to see any literature on it. So for me, I've only started doing it because I've seen others using it or others trying it. And I thought, I breathe through my mouth, so it doesn't look like it's something harmful to me. So it's definitely something I could try. But the product you've got definitely looks, and from what I've seen and from what I've heard, sounds like it's definitely different, but it also has great quality to it. And I think that's the important part. You guys are doing the research, and you are looking at making sure it works properly and it has a purpose, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's the route we've got. The one of the companies behind it, or the main company behind it that designed and developed it and did all the electronics and form factor and things, is a 40-year-old medical devices company that designed and develops medical devices. And we've worked with, and Zeus is a company with, so the shareholders are King's College London and Guy's and St Thomas Hospital. So absolutely, it's very much around the science.
All the right people around you.
Yeah.
And how can healthy habits help snoring? You know, how can getting something like this really, really kind of, like, obviously, like you said, you're not a scientist, you're the gentleman who's in charge of the company, but, you know, with what you've got, you know the importance of sleep, and we know how sleep has become like such a hot topic recently. You know, before it was gym and it was food and all these things are getting combined, and now I'm seeing so much more on sleep. Like, do you have any numbers from any of the data or anything like that where you guys have, you know, really seen a drastic improvement, or have you got any figures off the top of your head? If not, it's not the end of the world, but just out of curiosity.
Yeah, we reckon our device works on about 75-80% of snorers.
Okay.
It works better on some people than others. Certainly slimmer jawlines, it works better. Mm-hmm. A slightly lower BMI, certainly from the clinical trials.
Okay.
We've used it on lower BMIs. And the mild and moderate sleep apnea side of things. Yeah. But we've also had cases of, you know, one case with a gentleman with a very large BMI and was a severe sleep apnea sufferer, and a very high sleep apnea score, and he dropped all the way down to becoming mild sleep apnea while he wore it. It very obvious ones. It doesn't work on people with a beard because it doesn't stick on. Yes. So you may have to shave a trendy horseshoe on yourself if you want to do that. Yeah. So it is very, very effective on, it sounds a bit stupid, on people it works on, but some people it doesn't work. It's a bit of a funny one. But in terms of, you were saying on sleep in the press and things like that, and the awareness of sleep, it certainly seems to be gathering momentum, that the importance of sleep and the importance of health. I'd say also, again, that it was very much on around the mouth tech, the importance of breathing properly. There is getting more and more awareness of nose breathing as opposed to mouth breathing. Mm-hmm. And all those things will hugely help. You know, obvious things like you snore more when you have a drink or a few drinks before bed. That's because alcohol relaxes muscles more. So there is an obvious correlation there. But again, you can be super fit, very, very healthy, slim, and you can still snore like a train. You can still suffer from sleep apnea. So there is that also, there's the genetic side of things. And again, you know, sleeping on your side, you will snore less on your slide. So training yourself, different ways to sleep, different ways to breathe, always helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. And would you say there's any big myths that you've kind of come up against in regards to snoring? Anything that you guys have discovered with, you know, working on the product that you've discovered, like any myths regarding snoring?
Well, the absolute classic one is the only people that snore are middle-aged, slightly overweight, drinking male adults. And it's worse when you eat cheese and drink booze before bed. The research and the statistics we've got is 40% of snorers are female. So, really? You know, absolutely. They may not be as loud. I don't know. I don't know the facts around the loudness and things like that. But, you know.
Not sure on the decibels, no.
Yeah, that's right. But a huge number of women snore. Unfortunately, you know, there are statistics as well around more women snore after menopause and things because of the effect of menopause on the body.
Yeah, of course.
So it's not just the middle-aged, overweight male that is the snorer. And also, you know, the interesting part for us with a new product is, who do we promote this to? Do we actually promote it to the snorer, where maybe it doesn't affect them, or the person lying next to the snorer or in the room next door to the snorer, who's the one that's truly affected and has the interrupted sleep?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? I mean, do you have any figures, or do you, you know, that people, snoring must affect relationships, right? There must be an impact on relationships. There must be stats out there about the impact on snoring with relationships. So,
yeah. There's some frightening statistics. So some of the things, there are, 45% of adults snore, 25% of adults habitually snore, so every night or most nights. There are 8 million people that have sleep apnea, whereas only under 1 million are diagnosed with sleep apnea. So there are 7 million plus adults walking around with undiagnosed sleep apnea when you actually stop breathing during the night. And, you know, if an interesting one for me is 565,000 couples in the UK sleep in separate bedrooms. The majority of those, or very, very large percentage of those, will be due to snoring. And, you know, that's quite staggering. And there's you know, a lot of press recently in the sleep divorce and effects that has on relationships and things, positive and negative.
I can kind of see that. Obviously, I didn't know the figures and stuff, but that's crazy, isn't it? Like, so many people sleeping in different rooms because of snoring, or different beds because of snoring. That's it's quite the relationship kind of blocker, really, isn't it?
Sometimes, or not.
Yeah,
you know.
Or not. Yeah, maybe that's what some people want, isn't it? So we are going to have probably time for another question or two. So when does snoring become an issue for someone? So we've obviously spoken lots about, you know, sleep and, you know, you've mentioned at the start about the product, but when does it become an issue? Is it when people are waking up from, you know, sleep apnea? Or is it when, like we said, their partner's going, oh, roll over, go on your side, you know, that little kick in the back or that little nudge, you know?
So different areas. One is when it's affecting your partner next to you, because they are probably suffering more in terms of interrupted sleep and how they feel in the morning, how they function the next day. You don't often, you know, I, for example, wake up most nights because I've reached a certain age and I need to go to the loo. But I fortunately fall back asleep fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. But, you know, once that becomes a habit, it's quite difficult to get out of, and that is not great for your sleep. You know, there's a lot of research done on how good deep sleep is and REM sleep, and you need it to function the next day. And it's often not during the night that it's the problem. It's the daytime function the next day. It's with so it's the bed partner that suffers to start with.
Yeah.
Then if you're snoring does elevate into sleep apnea, when you're gasping for breath, when you're actually stopping breathing, there are firstly huge issues with your sleep and your quality of sleep and your daytime function the next day. But then far more importantly, there are very, very strong links for sleep apnea with heart conditions, diabetes and things like that, because you are not getting the oxygen you need to your brain, to your heart and things like that, when it should be repairing, when it should be resting, when it should be, you know, rejuvenating.
Yeah. Okay. And final question. Where can we find more information about Zeus Sleep?
Brilliant. Well, many thanks. So, yeah, we are selling online at the moment. It is ZeusSleeps.com, and all the information is on there. And hopefully as much information as you need. We are a small startup. We're only a team of three or four of us. But anything you need, just drop us an email. Get in touch with us. We'll answer all your questions. But hopefully, you know, the clinical trials are up there, some testimonials, a few things to put people off that we know it won't work with. So, you know, unless you're willing to shave, please don't try this. There's lots of other solutions as well that might work for you. And, yeah, love to hear from you.
Perfect. Well, Nigel, thank you so much for your time. You have a great rest of your day. Good luck with everything. And I'm looking forward to seeing more and hearing more about your amazing product.
Fantastic. Huge thanks to you, George.
Thanks so really much for your time. You have a great day. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Right, guys, we are going to jump back to some listener questions and some TikTok stuff. So I currently have on the screen 5 performance/recovery tools I can't live without. Go.
5 performance and recovery tools I can't live without. 1, we got the Hyper Ice for tissue work. 2, we got the portable sauna, which allows my muscles to recover and reduces inflammation. 3, we got magnesium cream from Ancient Minerals. This helps with cramping and muscle contraction. Now I got my Sobac, which I use daily. This is going to help me reduce back pain and get more T-spine extension. And definitely get a 26-ounce tumbler. Allows you to stay on track with your water intake.
Right, okay. Well, that was very, very fast, but good thing I've got a faster hand to write things down. So, first one, massage gun. Yes, absolutely yes. It isn't quite as good as massage for recovery, or if you are a regular listener, you know, a hug from a loved one for 30 minutes. We love it. We like to repeat that one a lot because physical touch is important for recovery. So, the gun, yes. Sauna is actually not that good for recovery, but it's very good for growth. Now, heat is what I recommended for my athletes back when I worked in football, when I've worked with any athletes. Heat is very, very good to promote growth, okay? Ice and cool is very good for suppressing things, helping with recovery, decreasing that soreness. So Yeah, I would say no to the sauna. It's good for growth, but it's not what you want for recovery. You want to feel fresh, right? Magnesium. So magnesium is a supplement that I think he said magnesium cream. Either way, never heard of magnesium cream in my life. Not sure I would try it. Magnesium as a supplement is very good for recovery. So yes, because it aids with sleep, and sleep is one of the hugest things. It's the biggest thing, along with food and hydration. A psoas back, which is obviously your iliac psoas, is part of your hip flexors. I've seen these. I thought about buying one, but you know, there's one thing you learn when you do soft tissue and deep tissue work is you can't really massage the deep hip flexors. You know, seeing people penetrating deep into people's abdomens, see what I did there? Deep into people's abdomens is great, but there's a lot of organs in the way. So for people that actually that get treatment on their hip flexors and their lower back pain, you're not, there's a lot of organs in the way. Are you sure you're getting to the right area? Feels great. It's a real big deep tissue release, but actually I would say no. And the final one, water. Yes, absolutely yes. There's a reason why Jesus turned the water into wine, because he'd had so much water, he wanted a little bit of wine. So my take on this, massage gun, yes. Sauna, no. Magnesium, yes. Psoas back or wishy-washy fad machine, no. And water, yes. That is going to be our TikTok trend. Right, so for the last few minutes, we've got some more listener questions. So I actually don't think I finished some of the ones earlier. So I'm going to go back on to, is it possible to stay fit and healthy without setting foot in the gym? Yes, it is. And I'm going to tell you why. So a lot of people are scared of the gym. And a lot of people think that you can only get big and strong in the gym. Technically, yes. Technically, you can only build muscle tissue with tension, load, time under tension, all of these things. I'm not going to go into too much detail. But you can get fit and healthy without setting foot in a gym. You do not need a treadmill to walk or run. You do not need a cross trainer or an elliptical to do cardio, because you can walk or run outside. You can buy a bike and you can cycle. That's me cycling with my fingers outside. See that? See where I'm going with this? You don't need a gym. You need a gym if you want to have that environment, if you want to pay for something and make yourself go. I have lots of clients that have equipment at home that don't use equipment. I have women that I've worked with who are 4 stone down and they have never stepped foot in a gym. So you do the maths, you figure it out. But long and short, you don't need to step foot in a gym to get incredible results. Okay? Now, next question. Is it really important for me to reach 10,000 steps a day? So I actually mentioned this earlier, but I'm going to go back over it again because it's a really, really important point. The correlation between 7,000 and 8,000 steps and double the amount is not worth the trade-off. So from 0 steps to 7,000 or 8,000 steps, the time spent versus the calories burnt is incredible. But technically, the time it then takes to do double the amount versus the amount of calories you'd burn isn't really worth it, because it's like you're just going to turn into just a walking person, right? You're just going to spend all day walking. Now, if that's part of your life, part of your job, part of your lifestyle, whatever, then great. But if it's not, and it's, and you struggle to get your, you know, your however many thousand steps in, then just remember, you just need to focus on getting a good amount in. So I would always say 7,000 to 8,000 as a regular. If your weight stops dropping, you can look at increasing it to 9 or 10. I would say to someone, if you look at what you do, how many do you currently do? If you do nothing, then increase. And if you do 5,000, we'll add a little bit more on. Because let's say you did 2,000 more steps every day. That is going to be 14,000 steps a week, or 21,000 steps a week if you do 3,000 more, which is going to basically be about 1,000 calories extra. And to burn a pound or a half a kilo, you only need 3,500 calories out of your diet. So if you've done 1,000, that's only 2,500 you need, which I'm pretty sure is like 400 a day. Yeah, maybe something like that. So think of it like that. Don't think of it as a chore. Think of it as, I need to do this for my goals, my results. And if you lost a pound a week for the rest of the year, well, we've not got very long left, but, you know, you get my vibe. And that's it, guys. A massive thank you to Nigel and also Rebecca, who have joined us today on the show. You guys can listen and download and listen each week on all podcasting platforms. A reminder, you can download as well. We are What The Health on Instagram. You guys, if you're interested in health and fitness advice, you can contact me at George Burt on Instagram. I provide a top tier coaching service. I'll be back next week at 11 a.m. for another jam-packed show. I'm George. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. Love you. Bye.